Welcome to today. A very good morning to you. I am Kino Cummings with you all the way through until midday. Now, you might or might not have known this, and if you're like me and you have ADHD, you probably forgot it. The 14th of September marked National Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Day, or ADHD. Now, this condition is a chronic one and often begins in childhood and continues all the way through to adulthood. Now, if you don't understand the condition, it can be overwhelming, but recognizing what it is could certainly help you prepare for the best way to manage it, either as a parent or even as an adult having it. So our chat this morning is to Dr. David Benn. He's a psychiatrist who deals with both ADHD in children and adults. Dr. Benn, thank you very much for your time this morning. Great to have you on.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
So, I mean, this is a controversial issue. We'll chat about the controversies, but I think first and foremost, let's set the context here. What exactly is ADHD?
Okay, so it's a complex disorder. There are three or four main symptoms. The one is inattention. It's not an absolute inattention. Somebody who can't concentrate at all is severely impaired, so it's a relative issue. Coupled with that is high levels of distractibility. Thirdly, impulsiveness. And fourthly, and least important in my view, is the hyperactivity.
Ah, okay. We'll get to why it's the least important for you. So if one just looks at how it's diagnosed, though, that surely shouldn't be a simple one-hour process, because some of the manuals suggest that there should be extensive communications between the physicians, the doctors, and the parents, as well as the schools, if we're dealing with children.
Yes. I mean, it is complex, and I think both in private and in public practice, there's often not enough time to do it properly. But you have to really hear the story very carefully, listen to the story very carefully, including speaking to the child. You then must communicate with the school. And there are lots of ways of doing it, you know, looking at old school reports, getting the teachers to complete rating scales and so on. And then very often these children have also had learning difficulties, which often go along with ADHD. So they've seen occupational therapists, speech therapists sometimes, physiotherapists as well, and educational psychologists. So really making the diagnosis is putting all of that together and then deciding whether this has medical significance and needs medical treatment as well as the other interventions.
Okay, so that is generally what should be happening. In practice, though, and this is one of the controversies that I've alluded to earlier, is how it currently gets diagnosed. Because some psychiatrists have one chat to the child, you know, fill out a form, tick a couple of blocks and go, ooh, your kid is ADHD and needs to go straight onto medication. We'll talk about the medication as a secondary issue. I want to talk about the how it's diagnosed in real terms, though, and some of the controversies around that.
Well, look, a busy doctor is going to be looking for the symptoms. And, you know, it's not just psychiatrists. Also, there aren't really enough psychiatrists
yes.
to go around.
Yep.
That might be a good thing. Of course, some people think that. it's often the general practitioners that are dealing with this because there just aren't enough specialist services,
sure.
especially outside the main centers. And it really sometimes is just diagnosed on the basis of a half an hour interview. And, you know, that is to be avoided.
It's yeah. But because there's, I mean, you mentioned some of, you know, the characteristics around it. You know, one is distractibility. You know, there are many things that can distract one. The loss of memory. If the child has not slept properly, if they have to get into a taxi and they're tired when they get to school in the morning, that can lead to distractibility and even, you know, a lack of, ineffective memory when it comes to some of the work that they
Absolutely. Children that haven't eaten properly.
Yes.
I mean, that's an important group. Children that have chronic illnesses.
Yeah.
All of that contributes to concentration issues. And, you know, you do have to eliminate those. And other very simple things like, does the child see properly and does the child hear properly?
Yeah.
You know, when assessing a child, you have to know those things as well.
Sure. And those are the physical characteristics, though. I want to go back to ECD and preparation of children for primary school. We know now, Professor Jonathan Jansen always trumpets this, and rightfully so. He talks about the fact that around 74% of grade 4 learners can't read to understand. Yes. Now, they might read and they don't understand, but that's not because they, for example, might have ADHD. It's because they weren't given the skills up front to be able to comprehend what they're reading.
Absolutely, and that might even start at home before the child actually goes to preschool.
Sure.
Actually, in this context, those early interventions are extremely important.
So should GPs really be given the okay to dispense ADHD medication like Ritalin?
There are GPs that are trained to do it, and there are training programs that go around the country training GPs to do this. But when you do that, unfortunately, you're often preaching to the choir because, you know, you're getting the GPs anyway who are interested. You want to try and target the GPs that are not that interested as well. And, you know, there really are not enough specialist psychiatrists, pediatricians, developmental pediatricians, and pediatric neurologists. There just aren't enough.
Yeah, and I'm dealing primarily with children at the moment, but later we will talk about adult ADHD. But, you know, when you get to adults, when you get to my age, the horse had already bolted to a large extent. Doesn't mean it's not treatable, but the horse had already bolted. And I think we can certainly change our children's lives, their future, if we are able to arrest this early, manage it a lot earlier. So let's say you've got a psychiatrist, you've got a GP, well-trained, goes through all of the processes that they need to go through, and they now diagnose ADHD. There's the question of treatment. Now, I didn't say medication. I said treatment. What are the different types of treatment that we have?
Well, look, you need multiple interventions. When you prescribe, it should be part of a program of treatment. As I say, these children often need classroom interventions, and sometimes simple things like sitting in front of the class instead of behind the class, where they're less easily distracted. Many of them will need educational interventions. Typically, they have trouble with language, particularly written language.
Yeah.
So they'll need interventions at that level from occupational therapists, speech therapists, remedial teachers.
Yeah. Okay, but then, you know, and this is the other issue. And before I actually raise the issue, if you've just tuned into the show this morning, this is your final hour of today. I am Kino Cummings with you until midday. We are chatting to Dr. David Benn. We're chatting to him about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Why? Not because we just sucked our thumbs. Number one, it's important. Number two, we also had the 14th of September marked as the National Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Day. And Dr. Benn deals with both adults and young people when it comes to this. Now, we look at how children struggle with words on a page. We know that some people are more predisposed to, you know, the limbic part of the brain. Actually, most of us, you know, when you are emotionally engaged, when we draw pictures, you know, that primitive part of the brain kicks in, and it's easier for your hippocampus to store those particular memories. So surely some of what we're talking about here also boils down to the how we go about teaching.
Absolutely. I'm not an education expert, but our education system has not been designed for children who learn differently, like children with attention deficit disorder and learning difficulties. Many of whom have perfectly normal IQs.
Yeah.
They need good structure on the one hand, but on the other hand, they really struggle with unnecessary repetition, for example. That will drive them absolutely crazy. In some of the schools, and there are some excellent schools around, they take this into account and do deal with the children on an individual basis as best they can. It's very difficult, though, if you have 40 children in a class and half of them have not been well fed, you know.
No, this is true. This is true. So, which is why you said, you know, it should be part of an integrative program. It should deal with classroom interventions. It should also deal with how well that particular child is fed. But it should also deal with understanding the child as well,
yes,
and taking the
yes.
time to understand the child and not treating the child as if that child is one other widget on a industrial, you know, line that we're trying to get out at the other end and sell off, you know, to the world of work. So let's then talk. So treatment. Yes, we'll talk. We talk about the physical things we can do. Other people are suggesting, well, it's all about the diet. If you get them to eat the right food, it should sort out the problem. Do you buy into that?
Not entirely. I do think that what children eat is important. I think that, you know, it's always important. And there definitely are some foods that can cause problems. Too much sugar definitely can cause a problem, behavior problems in a lot of children.
Yeah.
There are some food colorants and food preservatives that are really not good, that cause behavior problems. There is no doubt. But quite often, when the diets work, they help the behavioral side, so the kids are better behaved, but they don't necessarily concentrate better. And the issue really is concentration, not so much behavior and hyperactivity, if you like.
Okay, now let's then get on to the medication, because the number one go-to drug is Ritalin. And then others suggest, and this is what the psychiatrist said to us once, you know, Ritalin's like cocaine. It directly stimulates, you know, the child through the nervous system. But if you take something like Concerta, it does so indirectly.
Mm.
So when do we actually go to the drugs themselves?
Well, it's a very good question, that, and I think the answer is when the symptoms are causing the child significant problems. The person that benefits or should benefit from being on the medication is the person taking it.
Right.
It should not be prescribed for teachers, therapists, or parents. It's for the child. So you've got to make sure that the symptoms are causing the child significant distress.
But how do you know that when you've got 40 kids in the class?
Yeah, very different.
I mean, if you're a parent, it's easy because you can monitor the distress at home, right? So that's fine. But when you're a teacher in a classroom with 30 to 40 kids, it's difficult to do so.
Sure. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So, which again is why I think it's important all through this process to speak to the child and ask them where they are, how they are feeling. And often with the medications, when they're correctly prescribed and they're working as they should, the children will actually tell you that it's working. It's interesting. They're often very tuned into what's going on.
Well, you're listening, as I said earlier, to Dr. David Bennett. I'm taking calls this morning as well on 021-446-0567 if you want to tell me your ADHD stories. You can also add us as a friend first on WhatsApp and send a message to 072-567-1567. Chatting about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And it's an important thing to talk about because this could affect your future. It could affect your child's future. And if we don't do the right stuff up front, we could potentially wreck a future. And if we're not wrecking that particular future, we could minimize the effectiveness of that particular future. Because just because a child has ADHD does not mean that they're stupid. They've got pretty normal IQs. Some studies even show that they have above normal IQs, and a lot of well-known business people actually suffer from ADHD. So we'll be wrapping up chatting to Dr. David Benn next. Welcome back to Today. Keto with you till midday, and a very important issue. It's called attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And the challenge, I think, in society is that we paint people with ADHD with a certain brush. But if we give them the opportunity to show us their true worth, I think they will blow your socks off. And you are joined by Dr. David Benn. Dr. David Benn is a psychiatrist. He deals with both adults and children, you know, having to deal with ADHD. Now, we were talking about medication, and you said earlier, Dr. Benn, that parents and teachers need to pay attention to, need to speak to children to just see whether or not it causes distress, the ADHD. And if it does, then you should go to medication. But the big question then is, which medication? Is it going to be Ritalin, like some people suggest, acts like Coke, or is it going to be Concerta?
Okay, I mean, Ritalin and Concerta have the same active ingredients.
Is it?
It's methylphenidate.
Okay, so they do exactly the same thing.
Well, more. Concerta is a high-tech, slow-release capsule.
Yeah.
Whereas the Ritalin, both the tablet and the long-acting, have a much simpler formulation.
Okay.
And the active ingredient has been around since 1955. It's not new.
Okay, but then do they both use the same method to stimulate the individual that's being targeted?
Yeah. Look, they are stimulant. They're classified as stimulant medications or stimulant drugs.
Right.
They're not exactly the same as cocaine. If you put cocaine and Ritalin in front of an addict, they're not going to use the Ritalin.
True story that, I'm told. Anyway, but
yeah.
I should change my psychiatrist by the sounds of it, by the way. Because I'm telling you, this is a discussion I had with a psychiatrist when I had my, now eldest child at the doctor to try and assess what the problem was. Number one, it took her 25 minutes to make the diagnosis. Number two, she made the comment about Coke and made the correlation with Ritalin and said, Concerta is very different. So I will be changing that particular psychiatrist. Now, moving on, though, the medication does not always work the same way. It's like most things. Individuals will react differently, and you could have a type of not a relapse, but you could have a negative effect where kids become zombies and maybe even depressive when they take this medication.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to realize that there's a wide range of responses. Not everybody responds the same. So you really do have to carefully tailor the medication and the doses and so on to the actual individual in front of you. Some people need very small doses. Some people need high doses. They're outliers. Mm. But they have to be benefiting. And when they're benefiting, has been properly done, this is a bit like putting on your reading glasses if you need them. You've got to put them on and you've got to read. You know, if you don't do something, nothing much is going to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting, hey? And you look at cases, for example, such as this law firm, Waters and Cuff. They've filed a class action suit against Novartis in Texas. Now, the Novartis Corporation, of course, the pharmaceutical corporation behind Ritalin. And this lawsuit claims that the Novartis Corporation improperly promoted the use of Ritalin in order to increase sales. In addition, the lawsuit lists a series of neurological and cardiovascular side effects that the plaintiffs claim Novartis does not actually relay to its customers. So just to extend that previous discussion, are you aware of any potential cardiovascular effects of Ritalin?
Yes. Yes, but they're extremely rare, and they apply to a very small group of people that have an unusual cardiac conduction defect.
Okay. And that. So how do I know if I've got a defect of that nature?
It's so rare that you can't really screen for it.
Okay.
Because you're talking about a few people in a million that will have it.
100%. But, I mean, you never know. Yeah. Some people's luck, hey?
You never
know. If you can't screen it, you don't know. I mean, there is a minuscule risk there, but it's still a risk nonetheless.
Yeah.
And then how do I know which doctor to trust? If they seem to be saying, hey, man, I'll send you on a golf day, or, you know, why don't you come and visit us and let's take a tour of, you know, some amazing places around the world. Oh, by the way, have you prescribed enough?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fraught area that, you know, the doctors and the pharma companies do need to be in communication with each other.
Right.
In South Africa, there are very strict laws about how they can do it.
Okay.
And what they can do. And I think it's quite a lot stricter than in the United States, for example. You know, you're going to get unethical doctors and you're going to get unethical pharmaceutical companies.
Sure.
That's going to happen. Yeah.
Okay.
Sadly.
Well, and we will be taking calls throughout the show around, you know, ADHD, and we will be doing a follow-up. It's such an important issue that I don't think one take, one hit on this is enough. So we'll be having a couple of discussions around it so that you can be better armed as a parent. As a matter of fact, I didn't talk about adults at the moment, and we've spent a lot of time talking about young people. The next edition will deal with adults in particular. But I do think as a mom, as a dad, a single parent, or part of a, you know, a three or four person family, you need to know this. And, you know, hopefully this information arms you. A quick bit of advice to schools. You are not an educationist, but if schools want to be part of the solution, Dr. Ben, what are some of the key things that they need to consider?
I think they need to be looking for the kids that are not fitting well into the classroom, that seem to learn differently. Because this is often the case with children with ADHD. So they'll often be very good verbally, but really struggle with the written word. Those kind of children need to be flagged. And they must not just look for the children that are behavior problems, that are disruptive. You also look for the children that are just drifting off and that are sitting in the back of the classroom staring out of the window. There's quite a lot of them. Also have significant attention issues and are actually easier to deal with than the kids that are hyperactive and very impulsive.
Well, what a wonderful chat. One could, you know, do these chats and probably do a podcast series about them, you know, hours long, because there's so many different nuances in all of this. But I really want to thank you for your time there, Dr. David Ben.
You're very welcome, Kino. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. This is Today. I'm Kino Kamis. And remember, if you want to call in, tell your stories, 021-446-0567. WhatsApp and 072-567-1567. Welcome to Cape Talk.